baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
It is a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon kind of day, buddy.
Yes, sir. Speaking of mailbag, right, sorry, this just popped into my head. I have mail coming today. Real mail. I ordered my first pair of Crocs. I'm a Croc guy now. I'm a Croc guy now. Very excited. I've been tracking my shipping all week long. I have a nice pair of black Crocs coming my way, and I could not
black. Not even jumping out on the ledge there. Right?
No, I don't want to be too
classic
showy.
Croc. Yeah,
I don't want to draw too much attention. You know, got to keep all the attention up here. Anyway, so yeah, Crocs coming my way. Apparently, I have a package from Garth coming of mail of baseball cards too, though.
So yes, you do. We both do. It's very exciting stuff.
No idea what's in there, but very excited. So thanks to Garth for that.
Actually, you know what? While we bring up Garth, I would like to just take a quick second here and be like, you know what? Garth has been just such an incredible addition to the walk-off community since he's such a gem, and he really does go out of his way to promote our channel, which is so above and beyond what he has to do. Hey, you know,
he does more to promote our channel than we do. totally.
We didn't need you to turn this inwards. Like,
not here for self-reflection. I'm here for outwardly
exactly.
Facing mail.
All right. Speaking of mail, let's get into it. It is the mailbag. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. We really appreciate all of the interaction that we have every single week. It's gotten to the point where I'm very aware and very, I guess, almost apologetic to all of you folks that we don't get to, because we're at the point now where we're probably touching on 5 to 10% of comments, and there are a lot of redundancies. So, you know, if your comment didn't get read and someone else's did that's similar, don't take it personal. It had nothing to do with that. You know, we try to mix it up as much as possible. Keep trying. You can obviously get a hold of us by DMing us on Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast on Instagram, or Twitter, at Walk Off Podcast. Join the Discord. That is free. The link is in the show notes, and you can always drop comments there. Okay, let's get into it.
All right, first one, speaking of redundancies, we got loads of comments on our John Gibbons interview. Mm-hmm. This one caught our eye, though. So from at Mary Chuck Bill on Twitter, they said, holy SH word, you guys actually got John Gibbons. I watched the episode where you were talking about him joining Twitter and speculating that you should try and have him on the show, and I thought, yeah, right, dream on, guys. Well, you showed me. Anyways, congrats, and you should try and get Joe Carter on next. Yeah.
I laughed so hard at that DM. And I, number one, great Twitter handle. Love that.
Yes.
Mary Chuck Bill. Yeah, thanks a lot. Honestly, we've got so much positive feedback from the Gibbons, from old Gibby, joining us on the pod there on Friday. So we really do appreciate his time, and we really appreciate all of you who had reached out and sent questions and stuff like that. And yeah, obviously, yeah, I like how he's like, well, now go get Joe Carter. The sky's the limit now.
Yeah, he can do the intro segment for our Boba Fett interview. How's that sound?
Exactly. Right. It does blow my mind, man, looking back on our guests. Like, we're just a couple. I don't know why people are talking with us. Like, Pat Hankin was another one. That Danny Jansen. You know, like, when we sat down and talked to Sean Green, I was just in my own head so much. And now that we've talked to some of these major players in Blue Jays history a little bit more, I still just don't understand why. But I love it.
I mean, yeah, the list goes on and on. I mean, speaking of John Gibbons recently, we had Shea Hillenbrand on last year.
Yes.
And that was, again, for me, like, just surreal. I know he's not, like, a fan favorite at this point, but, like, yeah, we've had pretty girthy list of guests on this show. So we've said it before. We'll say it again. You might not like the show, but we can't argue that the guests are great. So
the guests are great. All right. Yes. And way to use my word girthy there. Really throwing it in my face.
You know what? Speaking of comments, I didn't put any of these in the mailbag, but we got so many comments about your use of the word girth last episode.
And not being able to say soft toss and lefty.
That was the other one. Yeah. We had slop a few people tossing. Picked on that. A few people picked up on that for sure. So we always appreciate the good ribbing in jest. So thank you guys for that. All right, next one comes in from friend of the show, Lewis Foster.
Yes, says, Lewis.
So he commented on our clip about Vladdy discussing being open to an extension, right? I don't know which one of us said it, but it was something along the lines of, you know, being critical of long-term deals and they're risky, and we pointed out all these examples of mega deals like the Garrett Cole contract
that didn't work. Yes,
the Albert
didn't
Pujols
work
deal. All these ones that just were disaster, right? Fernando Tatis Jr. more recently, right? And Lewis commented with the Bryce Harper, the Manny Machado mega deals are working out really well, and Nolan Arenado as well. So I just wanted to push back on that. Lewis really knows his stuff, so I'm uncomfortable pushing back on Lewis too much. Mm-hmm. Very knowledgeable young man. But these three mega deals, I do want to just start by. All of these guys are like 30 still.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that a 13-year contract, when it's got 9 years left on the deal, has worked out, I think that's a little premature. Can you agree with me on that?
I can agree with you on that. You want a qualifier on that this has worked out. You want a so far, these have been good contracts.
At least, yes, if not more. And I'll get to that. The Manny Machado deal, I will give a pass and say so far, it has worked out. He is only 30, so I think he has...
5 more years, I think.
5 more years, yeah. So, like, call me in 2026 or 2024 even, and we'll see, right? Because that's...
You would agree if he continues to produce in the way he has for the next 3 years and they need to eat the last 2 years of that mega contract, we can say it worked out, correct? Like with every mega contract, it kind of goes without saying that the organization
you're gonna have a few dead
is
years
ready to bite a bullet at the end. Yes.
Okay. This is just an arbitrary number that I'm pulling out off the top of my head. Just a vibe check. But I would say more than half the length of the contract has to feel like a good deal for it to be a good deal. Like if it's a 9-year deal, I would say at least 5 of those had to have been like money well spent. Mm-hmm. And even that feels a little bit like generous on for this qualifier. Like I feel like it should be closer to like 60 or 70%. You know, if it's a 13-year deal,
that's fine.
I would want at least like 9 or 10 years to be like, yeah, that's good. And if we had to eat 4 at the end, you know, that's the difference between you signing them and them signing with someone else, right? Like you say Kikuchi's in Toronto on a 3-year deal because everybody else
now,
wanted to give him 2, and we had to give him the 3rd year to get him here, right?
I do think there's exceptions to this.
Okay.
There's the old saying, flags fly forever. So I think that if a championship is a part of that mega
that
deal.
A great asterisk, Scott. I know where you're going with this. Continue, but I just want you to know I'm on board with this.
I'm just saying, when you look at Nolan Arenado's contract, which so far so good, and I mean the Rockies signed him long term and then paid St. Louis to take him, paid St. Louis $50 million to take Nolan Arenado so that they could sign Chris Bryant for a mega deal and get way less production. Anyways, we don't need to get into the management of the Colorado Rockies. However, if you're just looking at Nolan Arenado, he has put up mega numbers. Even this year, he has been one of the, if not the top producer. I haven't looked at all the third baseman's numbers, but if he's not the top producing third baseman it's because Manny Machado has better numbers than him, but he's right there. He's right there.
29 home runs, 98 RBIs, batting average 296, OPS 900.
Superstar.
Elite. Yeah.
Elite. Absolutely elite. And on top of that, defensively, one of the top third basemen in the league. So right now, he is earning his money. I wouldn't say that it's a deal, but he's worth every penny that he has got. And if for some crazy reason the Cardinals wind up winning the World Series in the next year or two, and then Nolan Arenado falls off a cliff, I think you just bite it. I think you just, you're like, okay, that's fine. Okay.
This is my favorite of the three. This was my favorite one to pick apart.
He is performing
exceptionally well. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we could give St. Louis any sort of opinion. I don't think they get a say on whether this was a good deal or not. Because like you said, $50 million is being paid by the Rockies, right? I think the only person or the only lens that we're able to view was this a good deal through is the Colorado Rockies lens.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone in Colorado would say, Nolan Arenado, that mega deal sure worked out. We got him for two glorious years, and then he forced a trade, and then we paid for like a bunch of his salary to play for someone else.
Yeah.
Are the numbers there? Absolutely. Again, still only 31, but I think that we have to view it through the lens of Colorado Rockies signed that deal, and I don't think they would claim that as a mega deal that worked out really well. So,
mm-hmm. Can we talk Manny Machado for a second here?
Please.
Do you want to maybe pull up his stats here
way
while we
you.
Do this? Okay.
Way ahead of you.
Because I was looking over Manny Machado's career stats here recently, mm-hmm. and I was a little blown away. Obviously, as Jays fans, we remember Manny Machado coming up in the Orioles system.
Of course.
He made his debut in the AL East. He was always one of those guys that when the Jays went to Baltimore, he was the face of the franchise there, putting up great numbers. They moved him around from shortstop back to third, or from third base back to shortstop, and mm-hmm. his original position then to third base again. You know, he had some versatility. You look at his numbers, man. If he continues, honestly, even for the next 3 to 4 years to put up numbers like he's putting up numbers, I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Well, he's at 280 home runs right now. He's only 29 years old. He was a rookie at the age of 19. So
yes,
he's in his 11th season, right? So that easier to get to those major milestones, like let's just say 500 home runs, 600 home runs. If you start at 19, then if you're Aaron Judge as a rookie.
And start at 25.
25, 100%. Right? So you want to say what? Another 5 years? Let's go 4 years at like 30-ish home runs?
Mm-hmm.
So let's give him 35. Let's just be generous. Four times 35, that's 140. Plus the 280 that he already has. It's 420 home runs. And that
420,
only
man!
No, sorry. you knew this was coming. You knew I was going to get you there, didn't you? I walked right into that one. A pretty elaborate setup there, Scott. Kudos to you.
Yeah, right? Really, really rope-a-doped you into that.
But, I mean, okay, so that puts him at like 420 home runs at age 33 with another 5 years to... Yeah, I would say 500 home runs is
totally attainable. And
totally
do you have
possible.
His, look at his career wins above replacement. Is his WAR up there?
I don't know where to find that. I never look at WAR.
Okay.
I don't even know. Oh, here we go. Career WAR. 51 is his career WAR.
So he could literally finish his career with 100 wins above replacement, which is about as elite as it gets.
I would say 100 wins above replacement is going to be a stretch for him to get to. He had two seasons at over 7. That was in 2015, 2016 with the Orioles. And since then, it's been the highs
hovering
have
around
been
5, right?
Around 5 with the Padres the last 2 years. But there's a stretch in the middle where it's around 3 or 2, 2.5, stuff like that. So He would have to play at a very high level for the next 11 years to have a WAR that high, and I just don't think
You think he's got five elite seasons left in him, though, eh?
Five elite seasons.
29 to 34. With the experience he has now.
Maybe. I'm skeptical. I would say
he's been very versatile, durable.
If you put the number at three, I would say probably three. I would feel comfortable saying yes. 34, 35 years old, man. That's starting to be like, that's a vet at that point.
Oh, for sure it is.
I don't know. I mean, look at what Paul Goldschmidt's doing. He's 35, right? So yeah, it's doable. Yeah, I mean, there you go. I just talked myself into it. Yeah, he could do that. So if he's putting up six or seven WAR for five more years, that's another 30.
Mm-hmm.
That puts him at 80 wins above replacement for his career. But again, if I would say 90, it would still be an impressive number for him to get to.
Especially with the way baseball's been the last 10 years, where there has been so many dips in offense and there has been the dead ball and MLB without any ability to not constantly mess with the game, you know? So he has kind of grown up through an odd time in baseball. So his numbers are super impressive for a guy of the last 10 years, right? In the new style of baseball.
You know what, too? When he was in Baltimore, he was one of the most hated players in the league. I don't think he has that reputation anymore. Am I out to lunch on this? I don't follow the Padres too closely, but
I think if you're a megastar and you get out of the AL East, automatically the hate goes down for you.
Yeah, that's fair. I also think like the Fernando Tatis Jr. relationship, I think maybe it's just me. I could be totally out to lunch here, but it feels like I have more respect for Manny Machado and the way he's handled Fernando Tatis in like a big brother kind of a role. Like we've seen some of the outbursts and Machado's just kind of like, you know, putting him in his place and like, hey, we're like, we're playing for the team, not for ourselves here and this sort of stuff. You know, we've seen it on more than one occasion, right? So
we have seen it more than once. And I think it has become almost infamous, him yelling at Fernando there.
It's part of their
warm-ups.
This
isn't about you. This isn't about you.
All right. Anything else to add on Manny Machado? Because I do want to talk Bryce Harper before we move on.
No, let's get to Bryce.
All right. Bryce Harper signed a 13-year, $330 million. The most mega of these three mega deals. He has 9 years left after this season. Has he put up good offensive numbers? Yeah, you betcha.
When he's healthy, yes.
Last year, he played 141 games, which is, you know what, close enough to call it a full season, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like,
if you hit 140,
everybody has bumps and bruises. Yeah. 140 is fine. So he hit 309 last year with an OPS over 1,000. OPS plus of 179. He had 35 home runs. This year, 84 games, so not a full season. But when he's there, he's got a batting average of .296 and an OPS of .923. Still very good numbers. But he has missed time. He's only 30. Mm-hmm. There's 9 years left on this deal. Mm-hmm. And to further discredit this 84. Now, Bryce Harper, anybody who's been with the walk-off for the last year knows, one of my most punchable faces in the MLB.
Yes.
Would I punch him in real life? Of course not. He would whoop my butt. But 84 games. All but 10 of those are as DH. So even though he's only played, half the season, even that has been kind of limping his way through. And I just don't think that anybody feels good about doling out $300 million to a permanent DH or a full-time
DH. I think some of these caveats you're bringing up right now are reasons why we're going to see fewer mega deals as things roll out with this league. I think we're going to see more deals like Wander Franco and
Julio Rodriguez,
right? J-Rod, because what this allows teams to do is buy out the Arbiers and add a couple extra years. It also allows these players who are, you know, baseball skewing younger and younger every single season. It's going to allow these players who are starting their careers at 19, 20 to be free agents at 30 and maybe still score a mega deal a la Aaron Judge is doing currently. And if you look at guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., right, like he's 23 right now. Maybe he does sign an 8-year mega deal and go to free agency at 31 when he can still get another mega contract, right? I think that organizations are going to skew more and more towards 6 to 8 year deals. There's just too much evidence of it not working out. And health is such a big one, right? Like, look at Mike Trout and Bryce Harper, who are incredible players. If they are on the field, these guys are top 10 players. It doesn't matter, right? Like, if they're playing, these guys are top 10 players in the entirety of Major League Baseball.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
What good are they if they're not on the field?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, and I think that's the whole point of this conversation is that, like, even the deals that do work out still really don't, like, work out, right? So,
but at the same time, it's like there's only a finite number of these type of players, so maybe that's what is required to even have one of them on your team. Not every Major League Baseball team gets a Manny Machado or Vladimir Guerrero Jr., right? Like, a lot of these teams, even it's difficult enough to develop players into that type of talent, let alone to be able to scout them and get them on board beforehand. And then it's even more difficult. You even need more money to grab these type of players in free agency.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to end with this. I love your asterisk that flags fly forever, and any mega deal that results in a wedding
World
ring
Series?
Of sorts.
Yeah,
World Series ring. That's the word. That is a successful deal. So the Mookie Betts deals of the world, all the deals the Braves signed last year, all of those, regardless of how anything else turns out, were good deals. So very good. Shall we move on?
Let's do it.
Okay. Next one comes in from Baseball or Bust on Twitter. Reached out last night and said, "Hey guys, for mailbag tomorrow, can you talk about how insane it is that the Mets pulled Max Scherzer after 6 perfect innings? WTF."
It's one thing to pull a guy in a no-hitter. But yeah, a perfect game, that's just baseball in 2022. Now, there are a few things to mention here. Max Scherzer it was his first game back from injury coming off of the IL. So I think that had a lot to play into it.
Pitch count, right? Safety. And
pitch count.
They're playing World Series ring.
I'm not sure exactly the pitch count. I should have double checked, but I think it's right around 70. Like, I don't think his pitch count was high, but I do think that with him coming back after injury and the playoffs, like, the Mets just clinched, right? They clinched last night. Yep. So with that, with their focus being on winning a World Series, maybe this was the right move. I do think that Buck Showalter is old school enough that there's no way he didn't have an in-depth conversation with Max before doing this. I can't imagine him wanting to ruffle the feathers of their $44 million a year man, but who knows? It is 2022. This is the way it's done, right?
This is the way it's done. Max Scherzer does not have a perfect game to his resume, but at 40-ish years old, I would say, is the move to pull a Max Scherzer easier to do, given the fact that he is a vet, that he understands, like, we're here for a ring? Like, let's take an Alek Manoah, if that is the comparison to be made, right? Like, if Alek Manoah has a pitch count, right? Let's not say he's coming back from injury, but for whatever reason, maybe it is coming back from injury. Let's just make it the same situation. He just spent time on the IL. Jays have clinched. Manoah's out there. He's 23 years old? 22, 23 years old.
24, but yes.
Well, in that case, if he's got a perfect game going through six innings, does John, and here's the other thing too. I mean, we talked manager comparison, right? Does John Schneider pull Alec Manoah in that same situation? You got to have some big cojones, man. Like, you got to have, that's a,
your pitcher better power be on board move. With this.
Yeah. Like, your, like, that's what I mean. Like, you've got to have this. You got to have the whole clubhouse on board with that, right? Like, you know, and I feel like, and that's the thing with the Mets and with Showalter there, right? Is like, he's got the resume to back it up. The Mets are going for it all this year, right?
Max knows what it takes to win too, right? Winning that World Series with Washington in 2019. He's been through the rigors of a postseason, and he's well aware of the workload that lies ahead of him. And so he probably, despite the fact that I'm sure he wasn't thrilled he was being pulled in the middle of a perfect game, I think that he has the veteran presence and experience to know what's best. I think
he's not
going to
pull a Chris Sale down in the clubhouse.
He's not going to flip out about it. And this is one of the reasons why he's one of the highest paid players in all of baseball, is because he does have that experience. He does know what it takes to win, and he is a team first guy. Alec Manoah, I think, I mean, at this stage of his career, and who knows, we're not really comparing apples to apples, because Max Scherzer at 24 years old probably would have also been pretty upset, because you know, Manoah would lose his mind in this scenario.
Yeah.
He gets pretty worked up being pulled in the eighth inning in a regular, you know, like, yeah. A regular scenario.
Yeah, that is true. Still pretty crazy that he got pulled. But yeah, Mets have bigger things to play for than personal accolades. And I think that's good baseball. I think that's what I would want to see my team do. If I'm a Mets fan, I'm happy that that happened.
Personally, I think if it's the Cincinnati Reds, the manager probably lets the pitcher go.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've talked to David Sampson before, you know, president of the Marlins, or former president of the Marlins. And he talked about that all the time when, like, you know, the team isn't in contention. That's what your team is playing for, is those,
yeah,
like,
personal accolades and cool things like
perfect games and milestones and all this sort of stuff. So absolutely, I think if it's the Reds, if it's the Pirates, if it's anyone else,
a team with zero chance of the playoffs, they probably stick with their pitcher who's in the middle of a perfect game, which, again, we cannot stress enough. No hitters happen a dozen times a year, maybe not quite that much this year, especially now that they've keep messing with the balls. But
perfect game is something else.
Yeah, perfect game is something else. Not very many guys.
What is there, like 20-ish of them in a 100-plus
years
of
baseball?
Yeah,
something like that. We'd need to look it up. But yeah, it is a very small amount of pitchers in comparison to a no-hitter, for sure.
All right. Next one comes in from Discord. A little conversation about Vladdy and the definition of being a clutch hitter. So Rezzy in our Discord. Discord, by the way, free to join, always free. Pushing 200 people in that community now. So lots of stuff getting shared, good sorts of memes, highlights, interviews from different guys, clips on Sportsnet, all that stuff. A lot of good game day chat. But Rezzy, talking about Vladdy, has a 977 OPS in high leverage situations last time I checked. And then Forbesy Jr. responds with, in my opinion, clutch isn't something really quantifiable by stats. It's more of a feel. Sometimes clutch is knocking the go-ahead run. Sometimes it's a two-out single to start a rally. Thoughts?
I mean, both of them nail it. Vladdy has been fairly clutch statistically. But also, how the heck do you measure that? Clutch can come in so many different moments within a game. Clutch can be measured in so many different aspects. I mean, there's guys who are defensively clutch who just all of a sudden, at come the seventh inning, you're not going to see them make an error. You're just not. Clutch can be, just like Forbesy Jr. said, two outs, bottom of the eighth, and then a guy hits a single to start a rally. I think clutch is one of those words that truly is a feeling.
Yeah, it's
I know their sure. I know their stats, right? You can always go and who's getting the most hits, seventh inning plus, which is what they're doing, right? That's what the clutch stats are, as they look at the end of the game.
Runners in scoring position. Exactly. After the whatever inning, what is their average? What is their OPS? Yes.
And there are guys who are big game players. George Springer is a perfect example of that. It seems whenever things are really on the line and the Jays need a guy to step up more than anything, he's the guy. Right, we watched him do it after coming off of injury while the Jays were scuffling. He comes in and became the hottest dude on the Jays for like seven games, despite the fact that every move he made with his elbow, he was flinching and grimacing, and you could tell he was in pain, but he just has that next gear. But you watch Springer in the outfield, there's only one gear. So there are just guys like that, right? That it's 100% or it's nothing.
I was watching a broadcast a couple weeks ago, and I believe Vladdy was on third base. And there was no outs. Kirk came to the plate. And there was an interesting stat. Don't quote me on this, but it was something along the lines of Alejandro Kirk was hitting like 5'11". or something along those lines of being able to get the runner from third home this season when there's a runner on third and less than two outs.
Incredible.
Like, that is big time number. So I think that's more than just his average, because that would have been also like sac flies and stuff like this. But it's the highest on the team.
If you can cash in a runner from third more than 50% of the time, that is about as good as it gets.
Big time. So that got me wondering. Let's say we're in the ALDS against the New York Yankees, and it is the ninth inning. Tie ball game. We have a runner on third and nobody out. Is Alejandro Kirk the guy you want, or do you still want Vladdy to be that guy? Or Bo, who's your guy?
That's a great question. I guess my
because
guy
like statistically, the odds are, you know, statistically, Kirk is, you know, on the back of the baseball card, the best guy to have in that situation, other than, you know, high leverage situation, I don't think was taken into account there, right? And it doesn't get
you
higher
know
leverage
what?
Than that.
I would go with Kirk if this is game 143. If this is today's game, I go with Kirk. I'm fine with that. You know, end of the season, the Jays are pretty much guaranteed a playoff spot. It's all about where they land in the wild card rankings at this point. Yeah, I'm fine with Alejandro Kirk. Now, if this is game 7 of the World Series, I want George Springer.
George Springer's your guy, hey?
He's been there before. World Series MVP. He has playoff numbers that are just completely off the chart. He's like one of the guys with a lot of playoff experience that his playoff numbers are even better than his regular season numbers. Yeah, I think I want George Springer. In the most high leverage of situations you can possibly come up with a game on the line, championship on the line, you want your $150 million guy to be that guy, and I think he is. Nothing against Alejandro Kirk, 23-year-old with a year and a half of MLB experience. I love the man. I think he's actually proved that he's probably our starting catcher come 2023, barring...
Ooh, okay, let's have that talk. Let's have that talk, Scott. Alejandro Kirk, starting catcher 2023.
He has changed my mind, man. It's not that I was ever a detractor. I just felt like he truly was the most likely candidate to be moved for a lot of reasons. The DH aspect of his game, how much time he needs, like how good he is at the plate and that he can't play every day. But I think we'll see what happens. But I think come the offseason, I think he's going to shed a few more pounds. I think he's going to be focused on being that number one guy. Even if it's a split, even if Danny and him can play three games a week each as the starting catcher. So, and I think Alejandro Kirk can do that.
So then we're moving on from Moreno.
That would
be. You think Moreno's part of a package to bring back like a big pitcher or something?
I don't know what this organization's going to do. If you're just asking me what I would do.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want to get into what do you think the organization is going to do. What would you like to see them do?
I mean, prospects are never a guarantee, man. Alejandro Kirk went from a prospect to a top two catcher in baseball this year when it comes to offensive output.
All right, let's talk offensive output then, because here's some numbers that caught my eye. Alejandro Kirk, we're going to compare him with Danny Jansen. Danny Jansen, 2 days ago, just his 13th home run of the year. Alejandro Kirk also has 13 home runs this year. Danny Jansen has done it in a little less than half as many games. Obviously, he had the injuries early in this season. I spent some time on the IL. So with about 40% as many at-bats, it's like 425 to 175 is the numbers, just for anybody who's really curious. But Danny Jansen has just as many home runs. Kirk has a slugging percentage of 432. Danny Jansen has a slugging percentage over 500. Kirk has an OPS of 811. Danny Jansen has an OPS of 831. So give me some pushback here. Talk me out of Danny Jansen's the best offensive catcher on this team, because I would say he's still the best defensive catcher on this team. But talk me out of that.
I think
small sample size?
No, I think batting average matters. Alejandro Kirk is going to come up with more hits. I love the idea of them platooning and both being the starting catchers and playing almost an equal amount of time behind the plate. And I think Alejandro Kirk has it within him to step up how much he's behind the plate, you know, because we're seeing him probably, what, two times a week? I think he can go to three.
Okay.
His body's held together so far. I mean, he's got that hip injury, but, like, this is the thing. Every single player on this team has something going on with them right now.
So you just value more, like, the volume of singles
like,
from yeah, Alejandro Kirk.
We've talked about this, man. I love Danny Jansen. I think Jano is fantastic. I wish him to go nowhere. I love the game he calls. I love the amount of confidence that he instills in his pitchers and how much his pitchers really want to make things work and are just seem to be on that right wavelength together when he's calling a game. Behind the plate, he's been good. Alejandro Kirk has thrown out more base stealers this year. I am not putting Danny down at all when I say this. I just think Alejandro Kirk has proven himself as...
Hey, these are two great options at catcher.
Yes. And you know what? Danny has proven that he can put up big power numbers in a small sample size. That's great. That's who you want as your secondary catcher, right? A guy who can come off the bench and hit one out.
I love it. Hey, look, for me, if Alejandro Kirk can catch more often next year, whether that's weight loss, whether that's not weight loss, but just better conditioning or a better yoga routine, I don't care what it is. But
whatever it is.
We need him to free up that DH spot more, because Springer's going to play there more next year. We still need to use it as those half days off for guys like Vladdy, guys like everybody else. So if he can do that, sounds good. And then let's flip Moreno into the best starting pitcher package we can do. And then I think we have the best catching tandem in all of baseball.
This kills me, by the way. Like, this decision, I'm so glad that I'm not at the helm of the Blue Jays. I'm sure a lot of people listening are also very thrilled about that. We get a comment like that once a week.
At least once a week.
Thank God you guys aren't running the show. Yeah, well, there's a reason we're not. We're just a couple...
Boneheads.
Boneheads. Giving our opinion here. Yeah, I mean, I think Gabriel Moreno has all the potential in the world. But, I mean, we have watched it time and time again. I mean... Maybe I'm just a little snake bit after Nate Pearson, but man, until you can come up and prove that you're the guy, like Alejandro Kirk has proved he's the guy, it's still a question mark, right? There's no guarantee.
Last question to throw your way on Alejandro Kirk. If there's regression next year, just in your gut, would you rather, let's say he hits like 235 next year, five home runs, just like not good. Would you rather, like what's an easier pill to swallow? I should phrase it as this. A situation where we sell high on Alejandro Kirk. We get a decent return on him in trade, but then next year he's just as good, if not better. Maybe he takes a step forward, right? Maybe it's like Gold Glove catcher or Silver Slugger or something, right? But he's an all-star again. He's hitting 300. And not that our trade didn't work out. The pitchers we got back are still a good haul. But we sold high, and then the stock continued to rise on Alejandro Kirk's career. Is that harder to swallow, or is it harder to swallow that we don't move on Alejandro Kirk and he has a major regression next year? And now we're sitting on a guy that we can't recoup any value on.
I mean, obviously the secondary one is the worst case scenario, that they choose wrong. Well, they stick with Kirk and trade Moreno, and then
they choose wrong in both situations, Scott, is the point. But which one stings more?
It stings more the regression of Kirk, I think. I think if you move him and he continues to progress, but you're happy with your return. I mean, does it suck?
I suppose that's an unfair asterisk to say that we're happy with our return, because we could have traded for Frankie Montas, right?
Yeah.
So there's no guaranteed deals. Jose Barrios hasn't exactly been a shining return on.
We could have traded for Luis Castillo too. So that, you know, like there's both sides.
Okay, well, that's something we'll just end that topic on then, unless you have anything else you want to add on that. We'll move on from there. Okay, Aaron Judge landing spots from Scott Carter on YouTube. That's the comment. He says, Yankees number one, probably correct. And then goes on to list a bunch of other teams, Dodgers, Mets, Giants, Cubs, etc.
Yeah, anyone with money.
Yeah, Scott says, who can seriously play in this market?
I think he nailed all of the teams. I mean, you almost have to put the Padres in there just because of what they've constantly done here. I don't think there's any way the Padres would be in on him, especially after this Juan Soto move. Mm-hmm. Who has the ability to give a $300 million contract? This is the thing with Aaron Judge, too. We were talking, we've talked this lot, so we don't need to spend too much time on here, but he has had one of the best contract years,
the bet on himself
that I can think of. The guy's gonna break Roger Maris's record for AL home runs. He's probably I don't know if I would bet on it, but frick, man, he's right there for a triple crown. He continues to climb closer. Like, I think he was like three points back last I checked. Yeah. Like, man, I think it's the Yankees. I can't see how the Yankees could possibly let him go elsewhere. But, I mean, the Rangers have money. The Cubs could spend big. We could watch him go to a division rival like Boston. Maybe Boston would be in on him. I don't know, man. That's a really great question by Scott Carter.
What is the luxury tax at this year? $250 million?
No.
Was it $230?
$217, I think.
217. Okay.
But Google here. I'll Google it real quick.
All right. Cause I got the list of committed team payrolls for 2023 up. So right now, the top payrolls for this year are the Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Phillies, Padres, Red Sox, White Sox, Astros, Braves, Angels, and then Blue Jays at 11. Below that is the Cardinals and Giants, and Cubs are all spending over $150 million. But if we look at next year for committed payrolls, Phillies have a lot of room to spend money. I don't know if that's something they'd want to go do. The Phillies want to go give a bunch of money to Aaron Judge and move... We were just talking about him earlier in the show, but do they want to move Bryce Harper to full-time DH? Or are they already in too much of a risky predicament with 9 more years committed to Bryce Harper where they can't take another risky 9-year contract.
I mean, that JT Realmuto contract has not worked out very well for them either. No. And that's a pretty mega contract. I don't know. The Phillies might. I mean, this is where we're at, right? Yeah. Like,
So we got the Mets at number one. They have a lot of money to spend. They're not afraid to go above the tax threshold. Then the Phillies, the Dodgers. The Dodgers going to be in? Dodgers will probably be in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta Braves is the fourth highest committed payroll. They're not in.
No,
that is not their kind of business. The Astros. I could see the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
Padres, again, I don't think so now that they've got Juan Soto. Because there's still talk of moving Fernando Tatis Jr. to the outfield, right?
Yes.
So I don't think that's the case. Then the Yankees, Colorado Rockies. That's a big pick. Colorado is not spending money on Aaron Judge. White Sox, Jays, Twins. Maybe the Twins do. If Carlos Correa opts out. Why not?
Yeah.
They surprised it. But I mean, that was probably like a Boris magic trick to sign that contract. Boston Red Sox, man. If this is a team that wants to like put 2022 in the rearview mirror. But they've got such a volatile situation with their players as it is. Like, the Red Sox have this reputation of not paying homegrown talent and just backing the truck up for guys like Trevor Story and all this outside talent. So on the one hand, does that mean, well, history would say that, yeah, the Red Sox are willing to go out and give money? Or is that a negative that they are going to try and work against, right?
Okay, so I'm going to give you the luxury tax rules here, and it is pretty muddy, okay? So for 2022, and it does scale up slightly because of the collective bargaining agreements, renegotiations we saw in the offseason. But for this year, $230 million is the first cap. First-time offenders, there's a 20% hit on everything over that. Second time there's a 30% hit, and then third time there's a 50% hit. The next level is 250 million, and then you're going to see first time offenders hit 32%, 42% for second, 62% for third. The next level is 270 million. Now we're getting expensive. Now this is a 62% hit for the first year, 75, and then 95, and then once you go over 290 million, it's an 80%, 90%, and 110% hit.
Drastic.
No one's doing. And I think the only one that's over the second $250 one, 250 million, is the Dodgers. Right? Or where is their payroll? You just had that up, for right? Payrolls year. Or what? Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
Dodgers. Yeah, this is great entertainment. 265 for the Dodgers, 262 for the Mets.
Okay,
the Phillies are at 243.
Those are the only two teams that are going to be hit by that second penalization, and then the Phillies will get hit for the first one.
Interestingly, Dodgers only have $160 million committed for next year.
Wow. Maybe Aaron Judge does go to the Dodgers.
They have room to spend, man. They have room to spend.
Wow. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. Like, the Dodgers are so good right now.
So stacked already.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
This one, last comment of the day. Randall P. Very generic name. Is it made up? We'll never know. Did I just make this comment myself as a reason to talk about something? Perhaps. Randall P. says, reading an article on MLB.com about the Judge Ohtani MVP argument, they seem to feel pretty strongly that Aaron Judge is the runaway MVP this year. Just interested on Scott and Adam's thoughts relative to what happened with Vladdy Guerrero last year.
I think runaway with it is a poor choice of words, personally. I think Aaron Judge is going to win the MVP. But I think it's going to be closer than people are giving it credit for. What are your thoughts? We've talked about this a few times now. We don't need to dwell on it too much, but.
Well, I mean, last year I was very much in favor of Vladdy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being a Toronto
Bias.
Fan,
yes.
may have had some influence there. But when Ohtani won it, I had no choice but to accept the verdict and the precedent that was set that being able to be like a top-tier pitcher and a top-tier hitter is an extreme asset to a team, right? You're getting the value of two players. And that's how I swallowed that pill, and I was okay with that. But I read this same article, and one thing that I didn't realize, the LA Angels have a six-man rotation to accommodate Shohei Ohtani and the extra off days that he needs, because his off days as a DH aren't really the same off days that a normal pitcher would have. That is not something I was aware of last year. He's never pitched in his entire MLB career, so three seasons now. He's never pitched on 4 days rest. Ever. This season, 9 games with 5 days rest and 14 games with 6 or more days of rest. For me, it was like the argument of Ohtani was, look, in a era where roster sizes are capped, right? You only get so many spots. There was a real value in my mind of having Ohtani gives you more roster flexibility, right? You're able to carry an extra second baseman or an extra bullpen arm or whatever the case may be, right? I thought that was real valuable, right? But if you're having to have a six-man rotation anyways, that paints you into a corner where you don't, like, all that roster flexibility is negated. And then beyond that, the fact that he, like, doesn't play outfield at all and only ever DHs. I mean, and we look at Mike Trout with his, like, weird back condition now.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk of him, like, not maybe being able to play outfield for the rest of his career. I know he has. He's powered through this season. I mean, can't say enough good things about Mike Trout. But that's like if you've got Ohtani who has to be DH every day and you need a six-man rotation, that's actually like in my mind, maybe the pendulum swung too far the other way, but that's actually like more restrictive for your roster management. That's not more flexibility. So
I
that's
agree
really
with
opened my eyes
you're
on
saying.
That.
I agree with everything you're saying. I do want to just point out before we wrap this up, just a real quick little caveat here that organizational philosophies on rest and how to deploy pitchers and players vary and substantially. And it can even vary within the organization from coach to coach. And I think we saw this firsthand here in Toronto with Jordan Romano and the way that he was being deployed and used by Charlie Montoyo and how differently he has been used by John Schneider. We have never up until John Schneider took over as manager seen Romano pitch more than 3 outs. He was always a guy who came in for 1 inning. He was a guy who wouldn't pitch more than 2 games back to back. And we've watched him go out there for 3 games in a row. We've watched him go out and get 4, 5, 6 outs since Schneider has taken over. And I'm not saying that necessarily Ohtani doesn't need the rest the Angels are giving him. And I understand why they are using the caution that they are using because they're a terrible team. And right now their revenue literally depends on Ohtani being on the field and selling tickets and selling merch and all of this stuff. He's their money train. So, of course, they're being incredibly careful with him. But just because this is the way he's being deployed, I don't think it necessarily means that it is needed, that it is on Ohtani.
Okay.
I would deploy him differently personally. I think he's a beast. I think we've never seen anything like this, and I would ride him until you can't, and then readjust.
Well, to make this argument go full circle, and the way a guy is implemented and used, right? Bryce Harper having a great offensive season as a full-time DH this year.
Yes, he was.
Since he's been moved into that role. Aaron Judge, if he was a full-time DH, all he had to worry about was swinging the bat, home run derby every night. Think he could get to 70 home runs if he was a full-time DH? If he was out there for 162 games, never had to play defense. And all he did, and I don't want to, like, this isn't related to the MVP talk or anything. Okay, this has moved on from that. You think he could catch Barry Bonds if he was a full-time DH?
No. I think Aaron Judge is a guy who would actually take a step back if he was a full-time DH. He seems so locked in, and I think him playing in the field keeps him in the game. Every guy, I mean, it's stuff like this is so intangible. Like, we're talking real abstract, right? Like,
none of it's adjusted for weather. You don't know.
None of it's adjusted for weather. Exactly.
All right, all right, Scott. That's it for mailbag, unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, let's leave it at that. Okay, appreciate all of you who have interacted with us over the week. Really appreciate it. All the comments and the likes really means a lot. Please, if you've watched this far into the mailbag and you're not subscribed, consider doing so. Helps a lot. We really appreciate it. To all the audio listeners, a big shout out to you. Our numbers continue to grow week in and week out on our audio platforms, and we really appreciate all of you.
Quick apology there. We did get a comment again from the Shumway, who was complaining that some of our videos didn't make it to the audio side this week. So that's right on me. Again, new schedule, new system. It was... We'll be better.
We don't want you audio listeners feeling like you're our
redheaded stepchild.
I was going to say that, and I was like, is that offensive? But
yeah, you know what? Probably is. That's okay. My brother is redheaded, so I get a pass.
There you go. And it's the end of the show, and probably no one's watching at this point. There you go. Right. There you go. All right. Thanks again to everybody. You can always shoot us a message on Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast, on Twitter, at Walk Off Podcast. Join the Discord. It's a good time. Our Patreon, a big shout out to all of you there. We really appreciate it. We're running on a new computer, basically thanks to you and all of the very generous donations from our community. So a big shout out there. Do you got the list of names here we can run down real quick, Adam?
Yes, you bet. So patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $1 a month, or $1 a week, sorry. Abraham, Michael, Sarah, John, Simon, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, Ian, Dunedin, Bob, John, Wyatt, Patrick, Joey, and Kyle.
Nice. Great job. You're getting to the point you need to do that in more than one breath. In fact, it's killing him right now.
Hacking up along right now. Hit the music.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you on Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.